This is an audio cast of the Frontline segment, A Subprime Education, broadcast September 13th on PBS. The correspondent is Martin Smith.
Tonight on Frontline, education in America.
The closing of ITT Tech is affecting students.
For-profit colleges and allegations of fraud and predatory behavior.
They were targeting the most vulnerable and desperate people.
Frontline investigates the rise and fall of this once booming industry.
You have termed these students that are signing up for these courses as subprime borrowers.
Yeah, that's a fair characterization of the types of students that are being served.
Coming up next, a subprime education.
Frontline is made possible by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you. And by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Major support for Frontline is provided by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information is available at macfound.org. Additional support is provided by the Park Foundation, dedicated to heightening public awareness of critical issues. The John and Helen Glessner Family Trust, supporting trustworthy journalism that informs and inspires. The Wincote Foundation. And by the Frontline Journalism Fund, with major support from John and Joanne Hagler, and additional support from Laura DeBonis and Chris and Lisa Koenig.
In the spring of 2012, Holly Harsh and Brian French were both homeless and looking for ways to improve their lives.
We were addicted to methamphetamine for a while, and we ended up in a bad place, going homeless in a tent. And it was like that for 4 years. We just one day said, we're done. We had enough.
I had started getting online, doing some research about government grants. And I put in my email address, phone number, all the information that they ask for.
Brian had stumbled on a lead-generating website that collects information from visitors. Within 24 hours, they got a sales call from Corinthian Colleges, one of the largest for-profit schools in the country.
He has a deep accent, and he tells me that they will grant me a decent amount of money. And I thought, we owe this to the kids to move forward in our lives.
The recruiter offered Holly and Brian money if they toured a few branches of Corinthian, including Heald College in Concord, California, which was near their encampment.
I felt that it's like we almost didn't have a chance to say no, let's think about it. And I do, if I remember correctly, it was only 3 or 4 days that we started school after that.
And you said to them, I'm homeless?
Yes. And she's like, oh, that's fine. A lot of our students are homeless in the same situation.
In order to enroll, Holly and Brian signed up for federal student loans totaling $30,000, all to be paid after they graduated. But they had no money for housing, so they simply moved their tent and belongings to a vacant lot next to campus and began going to class.
Welcome to my school. Everything.
Around 1.8 million students are enrolled in for-profit colleges across the country. In mega schools like Argosy, DeVry, and Grand Canyon University.
You've got $60 million invested in...
I started reporting on this sector back in 2009, during the Great Recession.
How big can you go?
With unemployment up, Americans were choosing to go back to school in record numbers.
Well, the irony is, Dylan, that when the economy is tough is when people actually look to go back to school and either upgrade their skills or maybe complete their BA. So
back then, I had looked at the University of Phoenix, one of the largest universities in the world. At its peak, Phoenix had enrolled over 600,000 students. I spoke to a former high-ranking executive.
Mark DeFusco.
For the first 15 quarters, we broke records in earnings every quarter. And instead of starting classes in September and January, we started classes in January and February and March, sometimes two in April. If we had more students than we could handle, we'll build another site and handle some more. We built campuses by a freeway because we figured that's where the people were. So if you went by any major freeway in the Southwest, you're going to find a University of Phoenix campus. We put schools 20 minutes apart because that's about as far as somebody could drive at rush hour.
How much could a college administrator for University of Phoenix make?
The sky was the limit. I shouldn't say this.
It's a free country.
I understand, but it's boasting and I won't say it, but no.
Well, in terms of how much you made, you did very well.
I did better than I ever imagined.
Education stocks rallied today, including Corinthian College.
In an otherwise flat market, for-profits had taken off.
Education stocks are moving to the head of the class today.
$24 billion. That's how much the biggest for-profit colleges took in last year in federally funded student aid money.
Not just a job search, a journey. Not just an interview.
For-profits were spending big money, enticing students to sign up for loans.
Whatever your business card says, you're in the business of you.
At the time, ad costs rivaled those of multinational brands.
Which university revolutionized education in America to reach the working learner?
You thinking about going back to school?
Yes.
Excellent. What are you thinking about going for?
The industry also employed an army of salesmen and recruiters.
Market analyst Jeffrey Silber.
The for-profits need to continually add students. When you think about it, for the University of Phoenix, for example, in order to grow on top of the folks that are leaving, you've got to add the equivalent of, you know, 1 to 1.5 Ohio states per year.
Senator Dick Durbin.
To satisfy their shareholders on a quarterly basis, they've got to increase their enrollment. They have to aggressively recruit marginal students.
Because only one thing counts in this life. Get them to sign on the line which is dotted.
Glengarry, Glen Ross. It's that sort of a heavy commercial environment in which you say whatever you need to say to close the deal.
Nonprofit school lobbyist Barmak Nasirian.
The pressure to grow encouraged dubious enrollment practices. Tammy Barker was an enrollment advisor at Ashford University.
They used to tell us, you know, dig deep, get to their pain, get to what's bothering them, so that way you can convince them that a college degree is going to solve all their problems.
Former Senate staffer Elizabeth Baylor.
The problem is that for many of these students, they think they're talking to an admissions advisor. They think they're talking to someone with some sort of ethical standards. And they don't realize that they're talking to a person who is selling them something and that they might be better off to just walk away.
Many students assumed they were getting a quality education and a useful degree.
I love Grand Canyon and the community that it represents, and also the Christian background.
This school is just perfect. It's night classes.
I'm studying merchandise product development, and it is the coolest thing I've ever done in my life. I love it.
In 2010, the top Washington lobbyist for the sector told me it was all about providing new opportunities.
Harris Miller.
We educate the students that traditional higher education has given up on. Traditional higher education has become a very socio-demographically elite group of people. So the only options lower-income students and working adults have is either to go to a community college. Some of them can go to minority-serving institutions, and our option is the third option.
But for years, for-profits had been charging students nearly 5 times as much as community colleges and gotten the bulk of their revenue, up to 90%, from student loans and grants.
Senator Dick Durbin.
This is the most heavily subsidized private business sector in America. No one compares. Defense industry, agriculture, don't hold a candle to these boys.
Hey, ladies, you have to hold the household down, right? Why can't you get an education for yourself?
You still can work. You can still take care of your kids.
I did it. You can do it, too.
But not all the promises were paying off.
The whole world opens up for you, but you got to do something right now. You can't wait.
Back in 2010, I met three students who had enrolled at Everest, part of the for-profit giant Corinthian. They were hoping to become nurses, but it wasn't going according to plan.
They said that we were going to be making $25 an hour and...
$25 to $35, yeah, they told me. So
like,
I was like,
how,
okay.
You know, you're...
And they're going to find us a job. They're going to place us.
I got my license in December of 2009, and I've been on countless interviews, and they all ask if I've ever been in a hospital, and I would have to tell them, we never set foot in a hospital, ever. We went to a museum of Scientology for our psychiatric rotation.
Our pediatrics rotation, we went to a daycare.
Oh yeah, that was our peds. We went to a daycare.
After our report aired, John Oliver picked up the story.
Job hunting might be a little difficult, as students from a Corinthian College nursing program found.
We went to a museum of Scientology for our psychiatric rotation.
What? Scientologists do not believe in psychiatry.
This is the next big scandal in America.
Washington also started paying attention.
It reminds me where we were 2 years ago with liar loans and no-doc loans in the housing market, where people started accepting people who couldn't prove their income, couldn't prove employment, but we sold them a $450,000 house.
And in a handful of hearings, some for-profits were accused of employing false or misleading advertising and using illegal recruitment efforts.
15 of the 15 schools that GAO investigated found instances of fraud, deceptive practices, or made misleading statements to prospective students. 15
of. In this hearing, they unveiled hard evidence.
And then just signing date right there for me.
Okay. Now, I'm not signing up for the school right now.
Yeah, you're actually reserving your seat.
Oh, I was hoping I could talk to the financial people first.
They won't even let you back there.
Am I on the hook for the $38,000?
Elizabeth Baylor.
The thing about those tapes is that it was really hard in the face of this evidence to deny that there was a problem there.
You should be ready to make the investment of time and money necessary to get you to where you should be at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not. What are you really afraid of?
Congressional investigators also found that for-profit schools were failing to prepare students for the workforce.
Too many of the students who go to these schools are coming out with nothing other than big debt and no education, no gainful employment at all.
In 2010, the Department of Education attempted to regulate the industry by implementing some new rules. But the department ran into intense resistance.
Secretary of Education John King Jr.
The lobbyists for the for-profit industry and unfortunately many members of Congress challenged those regulations, critiqued those regulations.
This so-called, quote, gainful employment, unquote, regulation is another example of this big federal government run amok.
They were overwhelmed. They ran into this withering artillery fire of lawyers coming after the administration and beat them back.
Well, they're doing everything they can to screw up education.
Barmak Nasirian.
The fact that the sector has declared an existential emergency around this. The sector has every lobbyist in town, former members of Congress, on its payroll to defeat this. Really kind of speaks volumes about the level of corruption and the kind of feeding frenzy we're talking about.
Last week when the House of Representatives voted to prevent the Department of Education from implementing tough new rules that could deprive certain schools from federal funding.
Trump University. It's been the subject of increased scrutiny ever
today,
since.
Today, allegations of predatory behavior and negative press continue to dog the industry.
Well, the Clintons got filthy rich off a for-profit university that took advantage of many poor people. Now,
but since I last reported on these schools, a lot has changed.
Are the for-profit schools
value stocks or value trash.
One of the big losers, though, that was Apollo Group that operates the University of Phoenix.
For-profits are no longer the darlings of Wall Street, and enrollment is way down. In San Francisco, I talked with Trace Urdan, a banker who kept buy ratings on several for-profits for much of the last decade.
They're into decline. Why?
Mostly market conditions. The economy recovers and everybody finds a job. And then all of a sudden, you know, that trade-off that said, well, hey, wait a minute, why should I borrow all this money so that I can earn the same amount of money that I can earn at Jamba Juice? That doesn't make any sense.
You have termed these students that are signing up for these courses as subprime borrowers.
I knew that was going to come out. Yeah, they were subprime borrowers. I mean, that's a fair characterization of the types of students that are being served, right? These are unsophisticated students that have a great deal of risk. Now, that's not true across the board with for-profit education, but certainly when you're talking in the context of Corinthian.
Corinthian, that's the for-profit chain that included Everest College. It's the school those three nursing students had attended. We looked one of them up, Martha Salmon, and found her living in Southern California. Martha had paid back the $28,000 she owed in student loans, but at a cost.
That was money that could have gone towards my house or for my kids. It could have gone a lot of different ways, but I just wanted to get rid of it.
Her degree from Everest never resulted in nursing work, so she was forced to start over.
I got my RN from Citrus College. It's a community college in Glendora, and from day one, the start of that school was totally different from Everest. There's really no comparison. For our psych rotation at Citrus, the RN program, we went to a psych hospital, and we were there for 4 weeks, and we were able to interact with the patients. We followed the nurses while they gave medication. It was an actual psych hospital. It wasn't a museum.
And how much did it cost you to get a degree from a community college?
My RN cost $3,000. But it's the education that you receive, the money that you save, there's no comparison.
Stories like Martha's got the attention of California's Attorney General. In 2011, Kamala Harris started investigating.
As we started diving into it, it became clear that Corinthian was engaged in extremely predatory behavior and conduct. And so we sued.
This morning, my office filed suit against Corinthian Colleges. And in what can only be described as a for-profit college predatory scheme.
A lot of what you charged was that there was a misrepresentation of job placement rates.
Absolutely. Convincing students that if you sign up to receive an education, we will ensure you will also get a job. That was all, I'm going to say a polite term, that was wrong and inaccurate.
It was BS.
It was BS. It absolutely was.
Harris based her complaint on interviews with over 100 employees and students, including Holly Harsh and Brian French, the homeless students at Corinthian's Heald College.
It's okay, pretty girl. Hi.
Holly and Brian had dropped out of Heald in their third semester, but the bills kept on coming.
And I was just like, how am I going to pay this?
Yeah, we still got bills coming out. They still want their, what is it, $288 a month that they want to get from us.
For you?
Oh, for me alone.
Can you afford that?
No, not really. We're living paycheck to paycheck as it is. Kind of what I say I got from Heald was at $16,000 T-shirt. And that's what we got.
Holly Harsh, mm-hmm. Brian French, mm-hmm. homeless, mm-hmm. recruited to sign up mm-hmm. for government loans to go to school. Is that an extreme case? Are they outliers?
Anyone is a target.
Kamala Harris.
They were targeting the most vulnerable and desperate people. People who felt that they were without resources. This was by their own marketing materials.
Yeah. And how do you explain that there are people that would want to take advantage of people like that?
It's greed.
Everest College is accredited by the West Coast Commission of Non-Accredited Schools. You can learn anything.
Corinthian would fast become the poster child of predatory for-profits. Videos lampooning Corinthian flooded onto YouTube.
You're probably just sitting at home watching Maury. I like Maury. I want to know who the daddy is, too. Make a decision, make a choice. You gotta call Everest. You still here?
By 2013, California's Attorney General would share her findings with the Department of Education. Soon after, officials in Washington decided to cut off the flow of federal funds until Corinthian could back up their claims of job placement.
Penn State professor Kevin Kinzer.
The way financial aid typically works, it's almost like they give the institution a credit card, and they can, in anticipation of getting that bill paid by the Department of Education, they can spend the money in advance. What the Department of Education said is basically they took away the credit card and said, no, we need to verify your expenses before we get reimbursed.
We're in the peak of sort of the highest amount of worry right now.
Erden was monitoring the company, and he told me that for most of the previous year, the CEO of Corinthian, Jack Massimino, was downplaying his problems.
He would say it's going to be fine. We've put these things in place, and it's all going to be good. And you know, the students are coming. Trust me, they're always extremely optimistic, right? So it's the job of people like me to try to filter that a little bit.
Did you ask that question? Are you defrauding students?
Well, no, I probably wouldn't have phrased it that way.
Maybe I should have.
I then asked him about the Department of Education withholding funds from Corinthian.
I knew something the department didn't know, which was that withholding that much cash from them would precipitate a crisis, right? So I knew that part. What I didn't see coming was that the department would actually do that to them.
Without the influx of federal funds, top executives at Corinthian saw the writing on the wall and prepared to file for bankruptcy.
For-profit college provider abruptly closes its campuses. KPX5's Kit Dillon.
On the morning of April 26, 2015, thousands of students woke up to hear the news.
As of today, school's out for good at Corinthian colleges.
It was the largest college shutdown in history.
Displaced after the sudden closure of 28 Corinthian College campuses.
School is over for thousands of Southern California students. They've just learned their...
Students were left wondering what would happen next.
Barmak Nasirian.
Corinthian Colleges goes under, leaving $1.2 billion, with a B, in federal student loan dollars in play. And the people who did it are on their estates or on their yachts, enjoying the fruits of their labor.
That's one of the concerns. These are federal loans these students have. So as a taxpayer, why shouldn't I be concerned about them?
Officials at the Department of Education were trying to determine who should absorb the loss.
For all those students who had gone through Corinthian
last couple of years. Some of whom may be carrying quite a bit of debt, and as we now know, probably have very poor job prospects relative to what they were promised.
Professor Kevin Kinzer.
There was so many students, so many campuses, there was no policy that could really handle that sort of scale. Again, remember the times when campuses have closed before, we're talking, you know, a few hundred students, right? A couple of campuses, then the Department of Education would be on the hook for the billions of dollars that those students might have outstanding in loans. And they were not particularly enthusiastic about taking on that sort of burden.
Instead of refunding the students, the department midwifed a sale of 53 Corinthian campuses.
Senator Dick Durbin.
What they told me at the time was we were afraid to turn loose on the economy or into community colleges and other universities, so many students at one time.
Too big to fail?
Sadly, that's what it sounded like. I never bought it from the start. It just didn't make any sense.
The buyer was a nonprofit specializing not in education, but in student debt collection.
Well, I don't get it. I don't get it. So this debt collector that collects bad debt for the Department of Education buys a whole slew of Corinthian colleges.
Yes. With the Department of Education, which is the regulator and the enforcer and the sheriff in town, actually stepping in to broker the deal.
We are Everest. We are Wyatech. We are Zenith Education Group, a nonprofit that's putting student success first.
The CEO of Zenith and the general counsel of the parent company, ECMC, agreed to sit down for an interview.
You raised a lot of eyebrows when you made this deal. You're a debt collecting company, but you're going into the business of education in a sector that is rife with high debt load.
Well, the ultimate proof will be in the pudding.
CEO Peter Taylor.
Our goal is to make sure that we can provide an affordable education of high quality so that when a student comes out of one of our programs, they have no more than $4,500 in debt. We think that's affordable for a job that pays 20, 25 bucks an hour. So are we there yet? Not quite, but we've made a lot of progress.
But your experience was in debt collection. What experience did you have in running a school?
General Counsel Dan Fisher.
In the particulars of running a school, we brought folks in from the outside that had that experience.
So ECMC had no experience in running a school, let alone a set of colleges.
That's correct.
I then asked them about a report Zenith had commissioned that detailed all the problems at Corinthian.
And I quote, talking about Corinthian, students were misguided, resources misdirected, questionable loans issued, and admissions departments pushed to recruit anyone with a pulse. So I want to talk about these abuses and what you've done to change things.
We commissioned the IDEO report because we want to be different than the previous owners. You know, from the point that we acquired these schools in February of 2015, fully 60% of those employees are no longer with us. The senior management, completely redone, as I mentioned before, completely new marketing team.
You say that your entire marketing team has been replaced. What about the compliance department?
So our senior leadership, all but one, never drew a dime of pay from Corinthian. And that includes the person who runs compliance. So we're in the process, really, of reinventing the leadership of Zenith Education.
While it's true that the top manager for compliance was replaced, nearly one-third of the staff in that department remains in place. Zenith also kept most school administrators and teachers.
Does it concern you that Zenith is operating Corinthian with the same personnel that were there?
John King, Jr.
Well, the key thing is that schools that Zenith runs have to serve students well. There's a monitor in place to help ensure that that occurs, and we're going to do all we can to make sure that they're serving students well.
How would you grade the department on monitoring and investigating the abuses that we all know have gone on at these for-profit schools?
So I would say an incomplete. I think we're making progress, certainly, compared to where we were when the administration began, but more to do.
Brand new regulations will hold these schools accountable for the value of their degrees.
In 2015, after 5 years of legal battles, the Obama administration finally implemented a gainful employment rule. Under this new rule, schools have 3 years to prove that they place students in jobs which pay enough for them to afford their student loans.
It'll take years for the final judgment to come in.
So we're going to regulate through the rearview mirror.
Absolutely. This was one of my main objections to what they did. The American public are not supposed to be lab rats on whom we experiment and then pass judgment on providers post facto. You wouldn't do that with food. You wouldn't do that with drug safety. The assumption is that the burden always ought to be on the provider to put enough evidence on the table that what they're selling the public, what they're financing with public dollars, is wholesome and at the very least not damaging.
The Department of Education has also launched a new enforcement unit, promising to more closely monitor for-profit schools. And this past month, the department sanctioned another school.
Students at ITT Technical Institute fear that school may not be around much longer.
That ITT Technical Institute can no longer enroll new students who use federal loans. Today's ruling.
I spoke to one ITT student who told me he had already borrowed $20,000 to train as an architectural designer.
James Jones.
I had to get in debt. You know, I don't have no rich uncle who gonna give it to me with a silver spoon. Even though it might cost a little money in the long run, it still be worth it. You know, I won't have to be dependent upon welfare or anything like that. As I get older, I have a trail under my belt.
Well, you haven't heard that the school's having any troubles or might close or might be closed down by the government?
Well, I hope I'll be able to learn the program before they do that, because I really need to learn it.
Just last week, ITT closed, leaving 35,000 students in the cold, including James Jones.
ITT Technical Institute is shutting down for good.
Go to pbs.org/frontline for more of our continuing coverage of the for-profit college industry.
This is the most heavily subsidized private business sector in America.
Read the essay that helped Omarina win acceptance to the Brooks School.
Learned their life for guidance and support.
Visit our watch page, where you can view more than 200 of our films anytime for free. Connect to the Frontline community on Facebook and Twitter and pbs.org/frontline.
Frontline is made possible by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you. And by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Major support for Frontline is provided by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information is available at macfound.org. Additional support is provided by the Park Foundation, dedicated to heightening public awareness of critical issues. The John and Helen Glessner Family Trust, supporting trustworthy journalism that informs and inspires. The Wincote Foundation. And by the Frontline Journalism Fund, with major support from John and Joanne Hagler. And additional support from Laura DeBonis and Chris and Lisa Koenig.
Subprime Education was written and produced by Marcella Gaviria. The correspondent was Martin Smith. The executive producer of Frontline is Rainey Aronson-Love. Frontline's A Subprime Education is available on DVD. To order, visit shoppbs.org or call 1-800-PLAY-PBS. Frontline is also available for download on iTunes.